This is Digital Story Podcast number 811, October 5th, 2021. Today's theme is Ben Long says a photo practice might not be what you think. I'm Derek Story. Photographer-writer Ben Long joins us on the show this week to explain his ideas on how to grow as a photographer, as outlined in his new book, The Practicing Photographer. In the interview, I ask him, how can practice be fun? He tells me I have it all wrong, and off we go from there. I'm pretty sure this is a half hour you're truly going to enjoy. So it's always fun to talk photography, talk shop with Ben, but this time, instead of talking about cameras and lenses and things like that, we're actually talking about the act of being a photographer, the practice of being a photographer. Now, what Ben has done, he's produced this wonderful book, and I'm holding it in my hands right now, and this copy is going to go to one of our Inner Circle members, and it's a collection of essays on the practice of being a photographer. And let me just read you some of the things here in the table of contents. He starts out by practicing, and what is practice? How artistry is learned and how studying the past can be useful. Then he actually talks about the act of shooting itself. Mind games. I love this one. Mind games. Why do other people's photos look better than mine? Clichés, which we're going to talk about in the interview. Things that go wrong can be good news. All right, so that's all in the mind games section. Gets into post-production, less is more. Boy, we talk about that in the workshops all the time. Gets into presentation as well. I mean, it's a cool little book, and all of these essays are very digestible and lots to think about in each of them. So as I was looking at this book, I had this book for a few weeks. I actually took it to Maui with me, and I was thinking, boy, it'd be great to have Ben on the show to let him talk a little bit more about what he was thinking as he was putting this book together, how all these ideas came together, and, you know, what we can do with them as photographers and people who read this manuscript. And he said, I'd love to do that. Of course he'd love to do that. It's a brand new book out, right? So here we go. We have Ben on the show. I'm going to ask him some questions. He's going to tell us what he thinks. And then I'll come back and we'll wrap up from there. I think you're really going to like this. All right, Ben, ready to go? Let's take it away. Ben, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Derek?
Pretty good. Do you have that wonderful flush feeling that a writer gets after just releasing a book?
You know, I think what people don't know about writing a book is how many times you send the book away for one step of the process, and so then it comes back to you. So you finish your writing, you tear the last page out of the virtual typewriter, and you mail it off to the tech editor, and they send it back, and you have all these questions to answer. So you answer those, and you send it off to the copy editor, and they send it back. And so then you send it off again, and then the proofreader sends it back. And then by the time the final book arrives, I just think, I've been sending this stupid thing away, and it keeps coming back.
Well, it has reached. I think the other part of this is, too, is that a lot of writers think that they're, when the book comes out, that that's the end of the project. And that's puts you about halfway through. And So now you're embarking on the other half, which is talking about this book. We should probably mention it, don't you think?
Give it a name. Probably.
The Practicing Photographer, Essays on Developing Your Photographic Practice. So this is this book is, I will go on the record right now, Ben, saying this book is different than most other photography books I've looked at. So I'd like you to tell me a little bit about what your thought was, where this germ of this idea came from to do this book, and what you hope to accomplish, what you hope readers will accomplish upon reading it.
Well, so the first probably obvious thing when you pick up the book to look at it, that you say this is different than any other photography book. This is a photography book with no photos in it. So that's one of the big changes. This book came out of the weekly series that I do on LinkedIn Learning, which I've been doing since it was still lynda.com. And that series started because the then content manager, a guy named Jim Hyde, had this idea that he wanted a weekly series that would spur people to go out and work on their craft. And so he came up with the title, The Practicing Photographer. And he wanted each episode to end with a call to action, so some specific thing that someone could go do. And it turns out that thinking up a call to action every week is actually a little tricky. So some of the episodes have had calls to action and some haven't. And over the years, in thinking about what should someone do every week to be a practicing photographer, my ideas have changed and refined a lot. And so I wanted kind of the chance to sit down and express just a single kind of current thesis that I have that's been developing over the time of doing this series. And so that's kind of what the book is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the way that you and your editor, Rick LePage, sort of organize this book, it does have a nice flow to it. I will say that it feels natural. It feels natural as you know, as I look at the table of contents and start to, you know, read some of the essays. That doesn't come easily, does it?
No, and that's why you need a good editor. I came up with a bunch of essays and just threw them at Rick, far more essays than are in the book, and he figured out how to get that flow. And then, obviously, you know, this essay needs, could be improved this way or that way. But then he also said, you know, we're missing a chunk here. And so I ended up writing a lot of new essays. But yeah, that's what a good editor will do for you. It's not just about wordsmithing individual sentences. It's about figuring out how to deliver the whole message. And the whole message is, I won't say meditation because that's too I don't know if I get to the level of meditation on this topic, but it's a discussion on what is the nature of having a practice, more in the sense of the way that you speak of a doctor or a lawyer having a practice. As a photographer, you should have a practice. And practice is not just, oh, I need to go saw away in the woodshed and get better at my craft. I actually start out the book saying your goal as a photographer should not be to take great pictures. Your goal should just be to practice. Because if that's your goal, a whole bunch of other roadblocks fall aside. A bunch of your own mental roadblocks and a bunch of practical roadblocks just kind of disappear.
You beat me to the punch, because that's actually where I was going to start. That was going to be really my first question. This notion of why practice and practicing takes practice, that sort of thing. Now, is this fun, this approach, Ben?
Okay. Well, now it's interesting that you say that, because I think that reveals your own, I think maybe you had the same experience growing up that I did, which is that practice is a chore. Practice is not fun. Practice is the thing that you have to go do because your mom is yelling at you. And there were so many ways growing up that was reinforced by the practice methodologies around, whether you were an athlete or in the orchestra or the band or whatnot, you know, practice was drills and it was someone yelling at you, or it was you having to report your time or any of that. That's not what I'm talking about, is practice.
Okay, good.
And so for me, yes, it is fun, but more than that, it allows me to, when I grab a camera and go out, immediately there's a whole bunch of pressure that's not there. I don't have to go out and be a great photographer. I can just go out and practice. And if I come home with a great picture, that's great. But the sense of accomplishment comes from, you know what? I was actually out trying today. I was experimenting. I was working some things. That's enough for me to call the day a success.
And I agree with that. I think it's a little bit of a mental game we play with ourselves. And this applies in a lot of different areas, right? But the idea of going out just to enjoy the craft, really, and to try to find some ways to get better at it without the pressure of, oh, I've got to come away with, you know, a great shot, something that leads to my next question, something that has to be, you know, 300 likes on Instagram, taking that pressure off, suddenly I think it opens up different parts of the brain.
I agree. And I think that if you go to just almost any other discipline, if they were hearing this conversation, if you went to someone who paints or someone who plays the violin, and they hear this conversation, they're going to go, you know, I kind of don't get what you guys are talking about. Of course you go practice. Of course you know that you're just trying to get better. The difference is a painter doesn't always produce a perfect finished work. They know when they're doodling, they know when they're sketching, they know when they're just trying something. As a photographer, every time we press the button, we get a finished photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's much more difficult for us to allow ourselves to practice. It's much more difficult for us to say, you know, today I'm just going to go out and I'm just going to mess around. Except that I know in the back of my head, there's still a chance that I could come home with that life-changing photograph. And so that pressure is kind of always there. You've really got to go through some tricks to talk yourself out of that, because everything we do is a finished photo.
I like that. I like that. And I think I actually, believe it or not, during the pandemic, I actually sort of embraced that accidentally, just because I was so limited in where I could go. So I would go out and embrace new things like infrared photography. And
right.
Without the goal of doing anything other than just being able to hold my camera, learn something new, and take some pictures, was otherwise kind of being squashed because, you know, my jobs went away and I couldn't travel and all that. So
right.
That idea of just going out and enjoying your craft, it was actually kind of neat. That pressure did come off.
Oh, that's cool. And I think that's what you went through was what, I mean, it's been a long time for you because you've been an accomplished photographer for a long time. But, you know, when you start out, the learning curve is, there's a lot of change really quickly. You can move through a lot of new material very quickly. Texture. Look what happens to texture in the late afternoon. Ooh, lines. Look what I can do with lines. And so it's just one exciting new thing after another. And then you hit that plateau where you've got a pretty good skill set, and now you got to really start trying to add the extra secret sauce that can make a great photo, and that's harder to find. And so then things can become boring, they can become demoralizing, you can feel like you're not a great photographer, you can feel like you're not getting anywhere. You put yourself back in that, wow, I've got something new to discover mode.
Yeah.
And that's something that kept us going before, but that can be harder to come by as you get better. And that's why you got to think about how to practice and think about what it means to go out and just shoot and how you might do that. I say in the book that, and you, I think you mentioned it earlier, you have to practice practicing. Mm-hmm. And figuring out the kind of practice that's going to work for you is itself a creative act, and one that you need to constantly refine and tweak.
That's fun. I like that. Hey, let's talk about social media from a photographer point of view.
Okay.
To Instagram or not to Instagram? That is the question.
So I was walking by, I don't remember where I was walking by somewhere the other day, and there was a little like art fair set up out on the street, and there were some photographs there, and they were perfectly competent photos. And I just thought, wow, you know, you can't hang these up at an art fair anymore because Instagram has changed everything. I can pull my phone out of my pocket right now and get access to some really extraordinary photography. The bar is much higher for what I can just get to at any given time. That's one part of Instagram. And I like that Instagram has exposed more people, if they choose the right people to follow and look at and so on and so forth. If they choose to do it, they can get access to some really nice images to study. That's not the same as studying images in a book that have actually been curated and put together in a project, but still, it's at least something. So that's great, but shooting for Instagram is a very different way of shooting than shooting for yourself or shooting to take good pictures. You've got to be very careful with your Instagram use. There's an essay in the book where I mention talking to a friend who's teaches printmaking, and he's a very accomplished printmaker, and I asked him if he could see a change in his students with the rise of Instagram, and I thought he would stop and think about it. And man, just right away he said, oh yeah, they won't work above a certain size, their compositions are always the same, and they don't think in layers. And it's interesting to look at photos on Instagram and with that kind of stuff in mind, because you can see trends. You can see how people are taking photos because to them it looks like an Instagram photo. that's not the same as going out and seeing. So it's a tough call. There are good parts and bad parts to all photography on social media, and I think you have to be thoughtful about your influence or about your exposure to it and how that influences you.
Well, I mean, I think even from my own Instagram account, you just sort of look at what gets a lot of attention and what doesn't. And the stuff that gets a lot of attention doesn't have layers. You can decipher the image in 2 seconds, maybe three.
Right.
So it's highly digestible. It doesn't have a lot going on other than this sort of like driving by a billboard on a highway at 60 miles an hour. That kind of thing. Those do well. If I put a photo up that I really worked on and that I thought, had some really good stuff, I don't know if it's because it's shown smaller or whatever, but a lot of times, quite honestly, those images don't do well. However, if I made a 13 by 19 inch print of it and put it up on the wall, I would probably get some pretty good conversation.
You mentioned to me a long time ago something that you were doing, that you were just leaving prints laying around.
Yes.
And finding that that really changed your relationship. And I would say, yeah, one of the things is it means it's a relationship where you look at the print more than once. Instagram is disposable. That those good pictures you talk about that are getting a response, does anyone ever come back and look at them again? And, we compare that to the great works. How many times have you looked at, The Americans or a book of Cartier-Bresson prints or things like that? Just Instagram has changed it to photography is now just an ephemeral disposable thing that you never expect to revisit.
Yeah, and that's a nice segue for the next thing I wanted to ask you about. I love this list of photographers for your consideration in here. And, you start with 19th century photographers and you come all the way up to the present. And I wanted to ask you the value in your mind of looking at this is a great list, but looking at these photographers that are recognized as artists and giants in the field. What, as a photographer, a practicing photographer, a developing photographer, which we all are, What in your mind is important about looking at these other photographers, for example, that you've listed here?
I would go so far as to argue that as far as practicing goes, you're going to get more from looking at other people's photos than you're probably going to get from picking up your camera and going out and shooting. At least at certain stages of your development or at certain times in your current state when maybe you're stuck or feeling in a rut or whatever. It's a weird thing about photography. You walk into a photo class and you ask, who are some of your favorite photographers? And if it's a beginning class, you're not going to get a lot of answers. Maybe someone will say, oh, Ansel Adams, because, that's a name they can pull out of a hat. You walk into a writing class and you ask someone, who are some of your favorite writers? And you'll get a big, long list for people. For some reason, photographers don't think that they need to study their own history. And so if you're wanting to know why you should, I think the first thing to do is say, well, would I be a musician without having listened to a lot of the music that I'm going to try and play? Would I be a writer without having read a bunch of the kind of works that I think that I want to try and write? So why do photographers think they can get away with not partaking of the masters of their craft? And so if you ask yourself that question and decide, well, hell yeah, I wouldn't do that, I'll give you some reasons. The main one being, as much as we like to say, here are some compositional, here's the rule of thirds, here are some compositional ideas, here are guidelines, so on and so forth. When you're really good, the process of photography is not a methodical thinking process. It is a feeling process. And it comes because you have just trained your eye up to a certain point in a certain way, and you train your eye by looking at photos. Just as musicians listen to chords and scales and modes and learn to hear, do all that ear training to hear that stuff, as photographers, you have to just look at lots of photos, not because you want to mimic them, but because you don't even know how it's going in there and your brain is sorting it out. You're learning vocabulary, you're learning lots of different ideas, you're learning mood, you're learning feel, you're learning light. All this stuff happens automatically if you just look at enough photos. And the best way to look at photos is on paper. Much better than a screen because paper is reflected light just like the light in the real world is. So colors and tones look more like they do in real life. And because when you're looking at a book, you're looking usually at a project that someone has put together. And I think that's another big part of practicing that has to come on at some point. There's going to come a time in your photographic life where you're tired of just walking around seeing what you can find. You're going to want to start to shoot towards a purpose, a project of some kind. And so looking at books of photos is a good way to learn all of that stuff also. But you've got to take it seriously that looking at other works is a significant part of the process. I have had the great good fortune to teach alongside a lot of really great photographers, and that's the one thing they all have in common. They all have huge libraries of photo books, and they all spend lots of time looking at them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I put them on the wall, too, here at the studio. I mean, I have a mix of my stuff, and you would think, well, it's your studio. Isn't everything on the wall your stuff? No, actually, it's not. You know, there are whole areas where I've got other photographers that I, you know, honestly, Ben, I never get tired of looking at those prints. And I've some of the stuff I've had on the wall for years and years and years. There's just something about them. And I think the word that I use when I'm judging, you know, for a camera club or whatever, is, you know, at the end of the day, is, does this image make me feel something? Or is it just, you know, I go, you know, technically you've done a lot of good things here, but I am bored as heck with it. I don't feel anything. And for me, not feeling anything, whether it's a photograph or a relationship or whatever, if I'm not feeling anything, it's that's a tough way to go. I can't hang in there very long.
I agree, particularly in an era where there are so many photos around. There's yes. Life's too short to waste your time looking at photos that aren't making you feel something.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about cliches because I think it actually ties into a lot of things that we're talking about here. And this was something that I actually personally really kind of grappled with back, you know, a number of years ago, which is wondering, you know, is everything I'm doing just a cliche? You know, is there anything new? You know, like street photography is just full of cliches, right? And on and on. How do you wrestle with this idea of cliches in photography?
That's a very good question. And it's one that I think ties into some other concepts that people maybe get hung up on, particularly when they're starting out. Cliche and style, you know, do I have a personal style? Some of those are questions that you can't answer for yourself until you've got more experience. Because, you know, actually, this is something else that I learned from you. You were over here one time, and I had a book of photos sitting out, and you were looking through it, and you said, this person's been shooting for a long time. And I said, how do you know? And he said, because there's so much black in these photos.
Yeah, baby.
And you said, in your experience, the longer someone's more been shooting, the more interested they get in black. And I think you were exactly right. And I can feel myself turning more towards the dark side with
yes.
every photo I take. Black is just fascinating. And that's a change that has come along with experience. My ideas of what I like, my ideas of what makes an expressive photo that makes me feel something, those have changed with time. And one of the ways they've changed, they're harder to come by now. I am pickier, I've seen more, and so on and so forth. And you just have to work, you just have to keep working, you just have to go through that. So that means there's going to be a stage early on where you go, you know, I think everything I'm shooting is a cliche. Fine. You're in the shooting a cliche stage of your development. Just keep going. They are cliches for a reason, and the reason usually is they work. And if you feel like, you know, I think this image is a cliche, then shoot the best version of that cliche that you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Be a master of that cliche, because that's adding to your vocabulary. And there may come a point where years later, you're still shooting the same cliche and still just a cliched photo, and you still don't like it. But there might be another cliche that you've been working on that now you've grown to the point where you can add something that to that cliche, and it's not a cliche anymore. And probably what you're going to add is black.
Yeah, I'm telling you. A lot of times we'll call them postcard photos, right? Which is mm-hmm. Another version of a cliche. And I totally agree with you. They are, in my opinion, they are unavoidable because it, to some degree, we need to shoot those shots as an establishing shot sometimes, or yeah. as, you know, especially when we're working on a project, you have to have those images in there, okay? They usually have quite broad appeal. You know, if you can do the Golden Gate Bridge so that someone looks at it and goes, man, that is a nice Golden Gate Bridge shot. I really like it. You get that out of them, then, you know, you truly have accomplished something.
Absolutely. And this comes up in a few places in the books. In the book, there are ways you can kind of hack your own insecurity by just making kind of some language changes in the way that you talk to yourself about your work. And I would offer that if you're worried that, gosh, I'm seeing all these cliches, turn that on its head. A bigger problem would be if you weren't seeing those cliches. Because a cliche is a cliche because it's a photo that works. It just is one that's so easy to see that it works that everyone sees it and shoots it. If you're not seeing that easy to see shot, you're in trouble.
That's great. So,
if you're just seeing cliches everywhere, then wow, you are so tuned into the photography zeitgeist that you're in great shape.
Oh, I love it. All right, last one. Let's talk about editing, because, you know, image editing is, in the modern age especially, but it always has been, because darkroom work was image editing, is a part of the photographic process. And I think sometimes photographers, even myself included, kind of wrestle with how much of it should be, you know, right at capture or the way I want it at capture. How much image editing, how big a role should it play? What is that balance between these two things? And is it even something I should worry about?
I think that's an important question. Not because it matters, but because it's one that everyone asks themselves at some point.
Yeah. Huh.
And I think it becomes, you know, that question of, oh, I've got to get it right in camera. Well, now you've taken this is my opinion, you've taken this art form and you've turned it into a sporting event. It's now about, ooh, can I do this? Well, the viewer doesn't care how you did it. They just want to know if they're feeling something when they're looking at the picture. And so I would argue that all of these questions are irrelevant. You do what it takes to get the image that you think evokes the feeling that you want or represents the scene that you want. If you have to edit it like crazy, that's fine. If you have to work so quickly that all you can do is get it right in camera, that's fine. If you have to print it out, paint on it with some finger paint, scan it, get it back in, do it because that's the scene that you think is best, that's fine. There, I would just say, you got enough trouble just learning to see well. Don't add to the problem by defining a set of rules that mean that, well, this is a legitimate photo and this isn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting when I run into people, either when I'm hanging out with photographers or in a workshop or whatever, and they go, pure photography is at capture. And, you know, all this other stuff is just, you know, what we've sort of done to it over the years. And I go, wow, there's a lot of photographers in, you know, that you really don't know how they made their images, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They've just jettisoned an entire segment of the early 20th century.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, pure photography, I don't even know what that means.
I don't either.
You know, photography is just about representing light with a limited dynamic range, ideally. And doesn't matter how you do that. I to draw another music parallel, if you are listening to, let's say you're listening to a piece of classical music and you're listening to a soloist play this concerto, does it matter to you whether they understand the theory behind what they're playing all the way down to the most basic level? Or do you just care whether they are producing the notes in a way that you like?
Yeah. Yeah, the latter. For me.
Yeah, they're masters of performance, and so what difference does it make?
Yeah, exactly. So this is fantastic, and I feel like we've given folks a good feel for, you know, what you're doing here in this book. So what is the best way, the practicing photographer, what's the best way for them to get their hands on it? Because I don't want to send them off to somewhere you go, no, don't go there.
No, I don't care. Just, you know, anywhere they can get the book, that's fine. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at CompleteDigitalPhotography.com or CDP.com. Doesn't matter where you buy it. You'll get it either way.
Yeah.
There's print and electronic versions. So we got PDFs and Kindle and EPUB versions. So any of the places that you would get any of that stuff. should have it.
Ben, I truly appreciate you being on. You know, whenever we talk, I go, God, we need to talk more often. So I'm going to say that again.
Yeah. Let's not wait till one of us writes another book. That takes too long.
Yeah. They're so laborious, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for being on the show, Ben. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Derek. This was great.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was terrific. As I said, I love chatting with Ben Long about work and photography and all that good stuff. And I hope you enjoyed listening as much as we did talking. Now, if you're an Inner Circle member, you can win this copy of the book that I'm holding in my hand right now. All you have to do is go to our Inner Circle site on Patreon and tell me in the comments which part of this interview, which thing really stuck with you and why, you know, relate it to your own experience. Just put that in the comments. At the end of the week, I'm going to pick my favorite one, and I will send that lucky Inner Circle member a copy of Ben's book. So Inner Circle members, go over to the site, let us know what you think, and we'll go from there. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. Just talking about Inner Circle members, just keep going with that. You know, they are the folks that through Patreon support this podcast and support this community. And I just want to say thank you to our Inner Circle members for everything that you do for this photography community. I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, the longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. They are the gurus of inkjet printing. They are the folks that I go to not only for my supplies, my paper supplies, my ink supplies, my envelopes, all that good stuff. They're the folks I go to when I'm trying to figure out the best way to print a project that I'm working on. They have a ton of information on the site, and you can also contact them directly. Now, the easiest way to see all the wonderful things that are waiting for you at Red River Paper is to click on the tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story, or go to their Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed our chat with Ben Long. Come back next week. I'm working on some great topics. Until then, stay safe, get out there and practice, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.